This is Dr. Scott McLeod at the University of Minnesota. I'm director of the UCEA Center for the Advanced Study of Technology Leadership and Education, also known as CASEL. You can learn more about CASEL at www.schooltechleadership.org. This is the podcast of my presentation at the TIES 2006 conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The title of the presentation is Can Schools Regulate Cyberbullying, Harassment, and Social Networking? The materials from this presentation and my other presentations at the conference can be downloaded at www.scottmcleod.net/TIES2006. Okay, welcome everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Scott McLeod. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota. I have the honor of doing the lunch session today. So feel free to eat, get up, wander around, get a drink, dash to the bathroom, whatever you need to do. I'll talk anyway. The topic of our conversation today is whether or not schools can regulate cyberbullying, harassment, social networking, etc. As we know, with the rapid rise of students' ability and employees' ability to use web pages and blogs and wikis and social networking tools like MySpace and Facebook, that schools are really struggling with, can they actually regulate some of the student conduct that's occurring on those tools in those cyber areas. You'll notice that I have a JD after my name. That means law degree. And so I'm going to speak today a lot from the legal standpoint about whether or not schools can regulate some of this stuff. And I will note right now, in case you want to jot this down, that my entire presentation, including hopefully the podcast of this presentation, I'm double mic'd here. I've got the podcast mic and the wireless mic both on. So you should be able to download both this presentation and the podcast from this website, and I'll show you that URL again at the end, but I'll give you just a minute to write it down. So you'll be able to access that as well as some of the other materials that I show today. Okay, so like I said, I'll show that again at the end when I take questions. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the director of a center called CASEL. The full name of that is the Center for the Advanced Study of Technology, Leadership, and Education, which is why we just call it CASEL, because that's a real mouthful. And we are indeed the only university center in the country that's dedicated to technology leadership issues in K-12 education. So not on technology integration issues. We're not focused so much on the classroom aspect, although obviously we do a little bit of work in that area, but really on the leadership that's necessary to make good technology happen in schools. We offer 15 credits of graduate coursework. We were the first place in the country to actually offer a graduate program that's based on the NEFA, just these National Ed Tech Standards for Administrators. We have a post-secondary partnership program where once we created that curriculum, we actually gave it away to 15 other universities so that we wouldn't be an island in academia. And we have lots of resources for K-12 leaders. So for example, we started a new project in October called the Principal Blogging Project. This is an ambitious goal of mine to try and get 100 new principals blogging in 100 days. So up here up front, I actually have information about that project. So if you're interested, there's a whole little purple thing on the Principal Blogging Project. And we have other resources for K-12 leaders too. We have a very highly visited website on school data tutorials, which means to give educators helpful resources on how to work with and analyze and manipulate and organize and display raw student data, because we're concerned that educators who don't have the ability to work with raw data are dependent on pre-made paper reports, which are very hard to slice and dice the way you want. We created the only psychometrically validated technology leadership assessment for principals in the country, and that's available from us as well. So there's a little yellow sheet up here that gives some information on some of the other resources that we offer besides the Principal Blogging Project, etc. And you can go there and find out about our curriculum and our courses and the other things that we offer you guys. So I have those on both corners at the end if you want to come up and grab one of those. I'll also have links to all this stuff on that website that I gave you. I'm going to give you a disclaimer up front. We are not in an attorney-client relationship. I am not representing you in any way, and you rely upon my advice at your peril. How's that? Now they basically told you to ignore everything I'm about to tell you. I'm just going to strongly recommend that you remember that it's always good to talk to a good school law attorney. I'm also going to give you a warning up front. This presentation is rated PG-13. This presentation will actually feature vulgar language. also known as profanity, some sexual imagery, some violent imagery, etc. And this is not stuff that I'm making up, but really just to show you what some of these kids actually put on their websites that schools try to regulate. So, if you're easily offended or concerned that this may not be for you, now's the time to leave. We need to start with a couple important principles. The first principle that we always need to keep in mind is that schools absolutely have an affirmative obligation to try and protect students and or employees from harassing conduct, from threatening conduct, from bullying conduct. As schools, we are not able to just ignore that kind of stuff. And if we do, there are actually severe legal penalties that can occur for us. Okay? So we always have an obligation to try and address this stuff in ways that we can. But that always must be within the confines of the law. So we cannot overreach. We cannot go beyond our boundaries. But within our scope of influence, we have the obligation to try and address this stuff. Secondly, the default rule that we start from is that student speech is protected. That constitutionally, under the First Amendment, students have the right to free speech. And so that always has to be our starting place. We don't start from the starting place that we can regulate speech. We start from the starting place that we can act, that students actually have the right to free speech. Let's see if I can get out of this feedback zone. So I'll move. So those are our two starting points. That we have an obligation to address harassing, threatening, or bullying conduct. But on the flip side, that the default is that student speech is protected under the Constitution. Now, the Supreme Court has actually noted that we have three exceptions to this rule. So three cases have actually made it to the United States Supreme Court concerning student speech. The first one, which many of you may know of, was concerned students who were quietly and passively wearing black armbands to protest the Vietnam War. And in a case called Tinker versus Des Moines, the court said that schools may regulate student speech, even though the default is that it's protected, if it causes a material and substantial disruption to the school environment. All right. So you can imagine, for example, if a kid just stands up in the middle of the class and starts hollering at the top of his lungs, you know, I'm against the war in Iraq, that obviously we have the ability to regulate that, and that would probably constitute a material and substantial disruption. Similarly, if your students decided to have a peaceful sit-in to protest some school policy, and they basically decided they weren't going to go to class all day, but instead we're going to sit in the gym, then we could probably regulate that in some way because it's disrupting in a material and substantial way the operation of the school. Now, we don't always have to wait for that disruption to occur. The court has said that we can, if we have a reasonable forecast that such disruption is going to occur, that we may regulate it. But in the Tinker case, for example, the school officials tried to say that if the students wore the black armbands, that there would be fights and disruptions and arguments and whatever. And in actuality, nothing happened whatsoever. And the court said that you have no past history to show that you would have some kind of expectation that a disruption would occur. And basically, you just didn't like the viewpoint, so you tried to keep them from wearing the armbands. And you can't do that because students have the right to free speech unless they're disrupting the school environment. And so, because you couldn't show that a disruption actually occurred, and because you couldn't show that a disruption might occur enough to persuade us, you lose the case. So, that's standpoint number one. And Tinker's really the starting place for student speech. Second exception to the rule that student speech is protected, vulgarity. We don't allow kids to be vulgar in schools, which is why we can regulate some of these, you know, innuendo t-shirts or not so innuendo t-shirts and other things that happen. And the Bethel versus Frazier case was actually about a case where a kid who was running for student council, his campaign manager stood up and gave a speech that was laden with innuendos. And they went all the way to the Supreme Court to decide that he actually was not allowed to do that. Finally, the third case, which is Hazelwood versus Kohmeyer, is actually a student newspaper case where the court said that the school has the right to censor student speech, in this case in a student newspaper, if it relates to a legitimate pedagogical concern. In other words, if it's part of the curriculum, then we have the right to regulate and govern student speech. So if student speech is occurring within a curricular context, within the classroom, within an extracurricular activity where they get course credit, those kind of things, that we have the ability to govern and regulate student conduct and speech. So those are our three exceptions to the default rule that student speech is protected. If there's a material and substantial disruption of the school environment, if the speech is vulgar, or if we have legitimate pedagogical concerns. Now, there's some other reasons that schools could regulate student speech, and it's the same reasons that we can also regulate adult speech, and they have to do with things like obscenity, yelling fire in a crowded theater, slander or libel or other kind of defamatory statements, encouraging people to break the laws, etc. Okay, now in addition to the Supreme Court cases, we also have some lower court cases that have extended schools' right to regulate speech to some other areas. So for example, some lower courts have said that schools can regulate speech if it shows disrespect for school personnel. Some lower courts have said that we can regulate student speech if it's mocking others. Some lower courts have said that we can regulate student speech if it's encouraging other people to break school rules. Some lower courts have upheld schools' right to have dress codes or hair codes or school uniforms, but recognize that those are not universally held, and depending on where you live in the country, student speech may or may not be protected in those areas. But above all else, even when student speech is protected, you always have the right to regulate time, place, and manner. In other words, you can say that during class, students don't have the right to free speech, but during recess, after school, before school, you know, during lunchtime, whatever, then we can't regulate their speech. That's an instance of time and place. All right, and also manner. Even though you may have the right to talk about whatever you want during lunchtime, you can't stand on top of a table and holler. Right, but you can talk quietly with your neighbor or your friends or whatever. So time, place, and manner regulations are always allowed. Okay, moving forward. Well, that's fine. Now we've talked about sort of when can schools regulate student conduct inside school. Well, what about outside of school? When can schools reach student conduct that occurs outside the school boundaries? You know, off campus, outside of school time, over the weekend, etc. And typically these come up in areas like, you know, two kids have a fight off school grounds, or they're trying to regulate drug or alcohol use, or an underground newspaper's floating around and they're trying to get at that. Or maybe there's some kind of peaceful protest and the school officials are upset about that. And actually, these concerns about student conduct outside of school have been around for a long time. In fact, there's a really famous school law case way back in 1859 where a kid ridiculed the teacher in front of some other kids after school, and the teacher took a, what do they say here? Oh, whipped them with a rawhide for ridiculing him in front of other students. And so there's actually lots of history of where courts have tried to figure out when can schools regulate off-campus student conduct and student behavior, which brings us to principle number three. Schools can discipline students for out-of-school conduct if it substantially interferes with the normal operations of the school. In other words, sounds a lot like Tinker, doesn't it? Right? A material and substantial disruption test of Tinker, where they said that if this speech materially and substantially disrupts the operations of the school, that schools can regulate that in-school speech. Well, if we extend that further, we say that if out-of-school conduct or speech is substantially interfering with the normal operations of the school, schools can get at it. All right? Otherwise, we can't. So the general principle here is that a school cannot discipline students for out-of-school conduct, especially when they're involving, when they're exercising a constitutional right like speech, other than under exceptional circumstances. All right. I'm going to tell you about six cases, and we'll see how you guys do on these. Now, as many of you know, I've also seeded the room with clickers. So you're going to actually get the 40 people who have a clicker, who also promised to give it back to me at the end, are going to get the vote, and the rest of you can jot down for yourselves whether or not you think this case is okay. So first, case number one. Brandon Busing, high school senior. He makes a web page highly critical of the school administration. He created that home page at home on his own computer, not during school hours. He used vulgar language to convey his opinion regarding the teachers, the principal, the school's own homepage. The homepage invited readers to contact the school principal and communicate their opinions regarding the high school. He testified that he did not intend the homepage to be accessed or viewed at school. A fellow student who was angry at him purposefully accessed his homepage during the second hour of school and showed it to a teacher. The student testified that she did not access his homepage with his authorization or even with his knowledge. He didn't even give the internet address of his homepage to her, but she had gotten it through another means. When she accessed the homepage and showed it to the teacher, there was only one other student in the room. The other student didn't even view the screen. There was no evidence of a disturbance. The principal made the decision to discipline him immediately upon viewing the homepage because it was critical and vulgar, and decided to discipline him because he was upset that the homepage's message had been displayed in one of his classrooms. The student was suspended for 10 days, and because of that, and the fact that when he got suspended, it affected his grades, he failed 4 classes. Okay, so, instant case number 1. Can the school discipline the student? Those of you with a clicker, point it at my laptop and vote yes or no. 2, 4, right here, point at the laptop. Everybody pointing and clicking. Everybody pointing this way, point at me, point it at me. 5, 6, I get another vote here. Now these usually work, that distance shouldn't be too strong, so let's try this. Try one more time. Everybody vote. 1 or 2? Well, this might be a bust. Alright, let's see what happens. The 5 of you who voted. Here we go, let's see what we got. Okay, 80% of you said no, 1 of you said yes. Okay, next case. That's interesting. I've used these in an auditorium with 150 students before, no sweat. JS versus Bethlehem. 8th grader makes a website called Teacher Sucks. The website has a bunch of pages. One of the pages says, why does Kartsotis suck? That's the principal. He says he sees another principal. He sees another principal at another school naked. He likes to fuck that other principal. How about my own teacher? Why should she be fired? Well, she shows off her fat fucking legs. The fat fuck smokes. She's a bitch. The webpage regarding his teacher went on to state, why should she die? Well, take a look at this diagram, which, by the way, showed her with her head cut off and blood dripping from her neck. And then look at the reasons that I give you, and then give me $20 to help pay for the hitman. Fuck you, Mrs. Fulmer, you're a bitch, you're a stupid bitch, 136 times. On another area of the website, there's a picture of his teacher's face morphing to Adolf Hitler. The teacher was frightened, feared someone would try to kill her. Stress, anxiety, loss of appetite, loss of sleep, loss of weight, memory loss, inability to go out of the house, headaches, taking Xanax, unable to return to school, has applied for medical sabbatical leave, student suspended for 10 days, recommended for expulsion. Okay, can the school discipline the student? Let's try again. Very strange. I'm not getting all these responses. There's 40 of you, I'm getting 5. I don't know. It should work fine. It's not infrared, it's radio frequency. All right, the 5 of you who voted, 100% of you said yes. Interesting. Let's try case number 3. The Emma case out of Washington in 2000. High school senior, also happens to be the basketball team co-captain, makes an unofficial Kent Lake High School homepage with mock obituaries. Now, the mock obituaries were actually sort of written tongue-in-cheek, and they were inspired apparently by a creative writing class the previous year in which students were assigned to write their own obituary. The mock obituaries became a discussion at the high school among students, faculty, and administrators. The student allowed visitors to vote on who would, quote, die next, in that who would get the next mock obituary. That was really the task here. Okay. One evening, the evening television news, the local television news, showed his website in a story that they had and said that it featured a hit list of people to be killed, even though the words hit list appeared nowhere on the website. The next day, he was summoned to the school principal's office, told that he was placed on emergency expulsion for intimidation, harassment, disruption to the educational process, and violation of school district copyright. He was later modified to a 5-day short-term suspension, but it also included missing the basketball team's playoff game. All right, let's try this again. I keep hoping against hope in my work. Those of you with clickers, vote. And again, I'm getting 5. Very strange. Okay, I don't know. Can the school discipline the students? We're a little more mixed on this one, all 5 of you. The next case, which is the Killian case. High school student, member of the track team, makes a top 10 list about the athletic director. Here's what the list says. Number 10, the school store doesn't sell Twinkies. Number 9, he's constantly tripping over his own chins. Number 8, the girls at the 900 numbers keep hanging up on him. Number 7, becoming the athletic director was considered moving up in the world. Number 6, he has to use a pencil to type and make phone calls because his fingers are unable to hit only one key at a time. As stated in her previous list, he's just not getting any. He's no longer allowed in any all-you-can-eat restaurants. He has constant flashbacks of when he was in high school and the athletes used to pick on him instead of him picking on the athletes. Because of his extensive gut factor, the man, in quotes, hasn't seen his own penis in over a decade. And number 1, even if it wasn't for his gut, it would still take a magnifying glass and extensive searching to find it. He made his top 10 list. He emailed it to his friends. The list made it to school. However, he did not print or copy the list and did not bring it on school premises because after copying and distributing similar lists in the past, he had been warned that he would be punished if he brought to school another list. Yet, of course, as happens, another student brought his list in and distributed it on school grounds. He was suspended for 10 days. Can the school discipline the student? And all those horrible, terrible things he said about his athletic director. I'm hoping for number 5 here. I only heard from 4 of you. There's number 5. And the answers, according to you all, are mostly yes. Okay, we're getting to good stuff here now. The Coy case in Ohio. Student creates a website for him and his buddies. They're a fictional skateboarder group. They call themselves NBP. It contains pictures and biographical information of him and his friends, some quotes that they have. And then there's a section called Losers. And the Losers section has a picture of 3 boys who attend the middle school. There's a few insulting sentences under each picture. One sentence describes one boy as being sexually aroused by his mother. In addition to the Losers section, there's 2 pictures of boys given the finger, some profanity, and a depressingly high number of spelling and grammatical errors. Student accesses his own website at school. Somebody notices. They ask the district technology specialist to check the computer that he was working on. Don't you love those requests? They conducted a history of the computer that he used and determined that he had accessed his own unauthorized website from the computer lab, unauthorized because it seems to violate the AUP, the accessible use policy of the district. And no other students viewed the site, just him. He was suspended for 4 days, later expelled for 80 days, which was then later modified to an 80-day probation period. Under the code, under violation of the student code, that a student shall not use obscenity, profanity, any form of racial ethnic slurs, other patently offensive language, etc., nor shall he be in possession of that on school grounds. Can the school discipline the student? This is pathetic, isn't it? Holding up the laptop on end like a radio receiver. The 4 of you who are able to vote say 50-50. One last case, the Mahaffey case. 2 students create a Satan's web page. It lists people that are cool, people we wish would die, movies that rock, music that we hate, music that's cool. The website said, this site has no purpose. It's here to say what's cool and what sucks. For example, music is cool, school sucks. If you're reading this, you probably know me and think I'm evil, sick, and twisted. Some might call it evil. I like to call it, well, evil, I guess. So what? If you don't know me, you will see. I hope you enjoy the page. The website then listed people I wish I would die, etc., etc. Near the bottom, the webpage stated, Satan's mission for you this week. Stab someone for no reason, then set them on fire, throw them off a cliff, watch them suffer, and with their last breath, just before everything goes black, spit on their face. Killing people is wrong. Don't do it. Unless I'm there to watch. Or just go to Detroit. Hell is right in the middle. Drop by and say hi. P.S. Now that you've read my webpage, please don't go killing people and stuff, then blaming it on me, okay? Student was suspended, recommended for expulsion. The question becomes, can the school discipline the student for his website? It's getting worse, not better. The three of you were able to vote. Boy, this is sad. Two of you said no. One of you said yes. Ready for this? How'd you do? Notice that the court uses the Tinker test in almost all these cases. The critical question is whether or not there was a material and substantial disruption. Remember principle number three, does it substantially interfere with the educational environment? In every case but one, the school lost. The only case that the schools prevailed on was the Bethlehem case where the teacher had a nervous breakdown and actually had to apply for medical leave. Every other case, the students won. No matter how horrible, no matter how vulgar, no matter how threatening, etc. Notice very strong protections for students' constitutionally protected speech rights. Very strong protections. In fact, the Busing Court stated it quite nicely when they said, it is provocative and challenging speech like Busing's which is most in need of the protections of the First Amendment. Popular speech is not likely to provoke censure. It is unpopular speech that invites censure. It is unpopular speech which needs the protection of the First Amendment. The First Amendment was designed for this very purpose. Speech within the school that substantially interferes with school discipline may be limited. Individual student speech which is unpopular but does not substantially interfere with school operations is entitled to protection. The public interest is not only served by allowing his message to be free from censure, but also by giving the students at the high school the opportunity to see the protections of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights at work. So, what lesson can we learn from these court cases? The only court cases I can find where it's actually gone to trial and had a judicial opinion on student cyber speech. The lesson of these cases is that just because it's unsavory, just because it's unsettling, just because you don't like what they say, doesn't mean it's not protected. Actually, they have to substantially interfere with the operations of the school. And notice that the courts allowed a lot of stuff to happen on the student end before they would go in and say it's substantially interfering with the school, for schools to regulate it. So, what does this mean for us? Well, it means, for example, that when we don't do this, that we get to pay big money. So, for example, recent story, Oceanport, New Jersey School District agreed to pay former student Ryan Dwyer $117,000 to settle a lawsuit claiming his First Amendment rights were violated from some postings he made to his website. What did his site say? Maple Place is the worst school on the planet. The principal is not your friend and is a dictator. Seems tame in comparison. They got to pay him $117,000. Principle number four. If you have a strong acceptable use policy, you can regulate student cyber speech if it's done during school time or if it involves using school equipment. You own the equipment. You control the school day. Notice that all the previous cases, the student speech and conduct was done off campus at home. If you've got a good AUP that covers it and you enforce it well and you monitor it well during school time, using school equipment, no problem. We'll field questions at the end. I'm almost done, actually. Principle number five, you have more leeway with employees. So if employees are engaging in harassing or bullying conduct, you have more leeway. Why? Because they're agents or representatives of the school. Employee speech is only protected if it's on a matter of legitimate public concern, like, hey, I'm concerned about the school district budget, and if it's not outweighed by the school's responsibility to run itself effectively. So even if it is on a matter of public concern, even if it is critical of the school administration or the school board or whatever, the employee can still be sanctioned or disciplined or punished if it disrupts the working relationships within the school building, within the school district, causes some kind of other kind of disruption to the educational environment, etc. So we give less protection to the employees, and we say that even though it's protected, if it disrupts the school operations, and in this case, even if it just hinders your relationship with your principal, for example, or the superintendent, that can be enough to say that we can discipline you. So let me give you an example. Teacher blogs. I'd like to ask that you and other staff stop referring to them as the Hispanics. Mr. Principal, we don't refer to other groups this way. We don't say the whites or the blacks. I cringe every time I hear you say it. I can imagine how they feel about it. I'm still shaken by the fact that a teacher had an argument with one of our girls, and when she left, he turned to a group of white students and said, "I'd stick my foot up her ass, but I don't want it coming out smelling like tacos." I'm even more shaken that nothing was done about it, and in fact, he was named Teacher of the Year. You've also been told that Jackass calls one of his students Jose, and because there are more than one named Jose, he calls them Hose B and Hose C. I think this is offensive, and so do the Jose's. Remember that the Hispanics are just as much our kids as any of the others. You also should look into something. In this country, we have separation of church and state. I'm not sure if you've heard of this, but I don't think it is okay to do prayers at every meeting and allow teachers to ask students what Jesus would do when they misbehave. No matter what your religion is, I'm pretty sure that's not appropriate at a public school. That teacher may have every right to criticize her principal, but when she does it publicly on her blog, she faces the risk of losing her job. We have an upcoming Supreme Court case. The court just decided in the last couple days to take this case. The Olympic torch relay in 2002 is on its way through Juneau, Alaska. A kid holds up a banner across the street from the school at a school event, but it's held off school grounds, that says, "Bong hits for Jesus," tapping into the media coverage as the Olympic torch goes by. The court has actually decided to take this case, and we're going to find out if they put additional restrictions on off-campus student speech. But until then, let's review. Substantial interference with school operations is a very high hurdle for schools. Notice that of the six cases that I can find concerning off-campus cyber speech by students, five of them went against the schools, and we have lots of other cases where schools are settling in large dollar amounts with students for inappropriately violating their First Amendment rights. You can always educate students. You can always try to persuade them that what they're doing is inappropriate. But you should regulate with caution. When you regulate and try to discipline kids, and you're not sure what the result is going to be, you might make new law, or you might get to pay kids hundreds of thousands of dollars to settle out for violations of the First Amendment rights. Again, just because you don't like what they say doesn't mean that you can regulate it. Private lawsuits are always a possibility, so think back to the athletics director, right, who had the horrible top 10 list emailed about him. He could always sue that kid privately, not get the school involved at all. Those kind of lawsuits are always available. The teacher in the Bethlehem case who had a nervous breakdown, she could always sue that kid, right, for medical care and pain and suffering. So we always have a private lawsuit that may be available if you can survive the legal hurdles of defamation, threats, harassment, etc. And remember that you have more leeway with employees than with students. Okay, I'm going to field a couple questions. Here's the URL again to get this presentation. We've got a few minutes left. Yes. Sorry, laptops at home. It's the school's laptop. If they use that laptop for inappropriate conduct, they're violating the AUP, right? And they're using your equipment to do it. Seems like you got them. Another question. Absolutely, yes, that would include district-provided software like Blackboard or any other kind of online tool where you're letting students have access. Sure, you own the tool, right? So you have the ability to govern appropriate usage. Whether they're in school or out, it's your tool. Yes? You know, educators are reluctant to sue kids for a variety of different reasons, of course. Yes, they do win some. So you just have to meet the legal test, and that's why it's good to consult with an attorney. So, for example, the athletics director should say, "Can I prove defamation here? Do I have enough to constitute defamation?" And the attorney will advise him whether or not he'd win that suit. My guess? Yeah, he probably would. So, yes, in the back, very back first.
When people talk about liability, it's reliable.
It depends on who's going to pay, right? So let's say that the student sends out the top 10 list about the athletic director. The athletic director sues him and wins. The kid and his family are liable to pay the athletic director, right?
So what if the
Similarly, though, however, if the school district tries to get involved and loses, the school district is then liable to the kid for violating his rights.
So what are the standards for that kind of defamation?
Let's talk about that afterwards. So that's a little outside of our scope here. So, okay, another question. Yes, ma'am.
MyGrade.com, illegal activity, just kids drinking. School policy says if you're drinking, you're off the meeting.
Yes.
Can the school regulate something if you click on MyGrade.com as a proposal?
High School Athletic Association rules have so far been upheld governing illegal conduct, right? So because students have the right... students do not have the right to drink alcohol. Students do not have the right to take illegal drugs. So any evidence the student gives them that such behavior is occurring would allow the school to come in and regulate that within the bounds of the contract. So, for example, if you violate the High School Athletic Association rule, we can take away your right to participate in extracurricular athletics, right, et cetera. Yes, right. Now, if you're doing something else that's not necessarily illegal, it gets a little fuzzier. So I would be very careful beyond that. But I think we're pretty safe with drugs and alcohol. So,
along,
yes?
Along that same line,
okay, so the administration assumes the student has been drinking.
So he's kicked off the team.
So they kick him off the team.
The legal system goes to trial and he's found not guilty.
Okay, the legal system finds him not guilty, yes. Schools have a different standard than the legal system, so there are oftentimes when schools can regulate conduct when the legal system can't. So it might still be okay, but it would be a separate issue. But just because the legal trial, the student was found not guilty, doesn't necessarily mean that the student is free from student from school discipline.
Oh, yeah, and now we're getting into not guilty versus innocent.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yes, question.
If your court case was settled for $100,000, that would be a basketball player. Does that play out in the game?
Yes, he did.
My understanding is, first of all, you can suspend him 10 days and can't be more than prepared for physical action. As long as you have that policy. Like with those skateboarders, they felt that they were being bullied.
Right. You're never allowed to punish a kid for exercising a constitutional right.
So those skateboarders didn't feel they're being harassed?
School lost that case.
But I never saw on your presentation, did they feel they were being harassed or it just was posted?
The court didn't say whether or not those kids felt harassed. The question was whether or not it disrupted the operation of the school enough to allow the school to go in and regulate the conduct, and the court said no.
So they had been suspended under pretext of harassment and bullying.
Well, that's what they would have been suspended under. They said it was not enough. There was not enough disruption there to warrant the discipline. Yes?
Do you know some districts that have really good AUPs?
Do I know any district that have good AUPs? I'm guessing Mankato does. So I would guess, a lot of districts have very similar AUPs. I think that the network of school districts and the school boards association, et cetera, works to try and ensure some consistency across those. Doug, you want to talk about that?
I think most schools now use the Minnesota School Board Association policies and may adopt. They've been vetted through employers.
So MSBA would be the place to look. Thanks. Yes.
All right. So the kid sets up a MySpace account using my name, says all the bad things about me.
Yeah, he's spoofing you.
He's spoofing me, right. For anything to happen, I've got to have a nervous breakdown.
Is that my strategy?
For the school to step in and regulate the student's conduct, it has to substantially disrupt the school environment. You always have a private lawsuit against that kid for any kind of defamation, harassment, threats, etc. Yes. But it has to disrupt the school operations enough for the school to be able to step in. Right? In other words, the school cannot step in where it has no business stepping in. Yes, Dave.
In any of the cases that they talk about the parental role in this and how the school might have been able to work with parents?
Sure. I think there's always the role for the parents, right? That's why I stress that the schools can always educate. Nothing's preventing you from calling parents saying, do you know your kid has this website up? Do you know that this is on their page? But bottom line is you can't force the kid often to take it down. They're expressing their opinion. Kids have the constitutional right to have an opinion. And they have the right to express it vulgarly and profanely and then say things that you don't like. And unless it disrupts the school, there's nothing you can do about it as a school organization. You may as a private individual. Yes?
Okay, so all the cases again, the students and teachers and students in the school.
Uh-huh.
What if you come across the teachers and you're harassing those students, and that other student is captured by this harassment?
Right. Are they using the school? You said they're using the school's computers? Any use of school computers to harass any kid is instantly yours to govern as you wish.
What if it's a website?
That's just like all the other examples that I gave you. You'd have to prove that there was enough disruption to the school, for example, that the kids started missing class, that they were, you know, they weren't showing up to school, et cetera, that their grades were suffering, et cetera. That's the kind of thing you'd have to prove. You'd have to persuade a court that it was sufficient enough to constitute a disruption. Yes?
This would be an important thing to think of, but would the converse be true where some student, you know, created a spoof on the idea? Well, the teacher created a spoof on
the idea. Well, let's say a teacher created a spoof of a student. No, because remember, we have greater responsibility to govern the actions of employees, and I think it's very easily defendable to say, you know what, you can't do this to our students. So, interesting idea. Yes?
Creating the disruption, if it creates a significant enough disruption for one child, you know, if they're doing this bullying,
uh-huh,
they're doing like with their text messaging, or
yeah,
they're taking,
yeah,
pictures of kids at school using their own personal cell phone.
Yes. Right. They're bullying one kid a lot. I don't think we know the answer to that. That might be where you decide to make your stand and see what the court says. Because you have that affirmative obligation to protect kids, right? But recognize all of the horrible things the kids said that the court actually protected, right? And then figure whether or not this one kid is worse than that. And that's the question you'd have to persuade the court. Yes? They're text messaging during school, yep.
During school by a cell phone.
Yeah, that's fine, but they're during school time. They're yours.
Well, once our, we had a situation where,
yep,
somebody at one school text messages another district, another school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
So you
harassing across schools. Hey, whatever, they're engaging in inappropriate conduct during school time. That seems to me like they're all yours. So, open campus? They're off school grounds? Maybe. Yes, question.
Does the school make assumptions about what they see or read on websites about kids' behavior? Going back a little bit to what was said over here about assuming that a student was consuming alcohol by what they saw or read, isn't there just a case in Wisconsin where kids were shown with alcohol in their hands?
Oh, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. So, I don't...
So the school can't make assumptions then just because there's a picture,
right,
of a student drinking.
Right. It's soda in there. Right, or whatever. Interesting. Okay, yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Yes?
You're a state employee. What are your rules of thumb for what you feel is appropriate for your own blog and not appropriate?
For my own blog, personally, as an employee of the state of Minnesota, as a professor at the U, I would be very careful when commenting on the operations of my employer. We have lots of instances of employees in both private organizations and public organizations losing their jobs because of commentary about employment practices. If you just have to get it out, set up a second blog, lock it down with password protection so that only you can get to it, and vent away. So be very careful about what it gets out there in public. And be very careful who you send a note to, because you never know who it's going to get forwarded to. So remember, we can regulate employee conduct much better than we can student conduct. Any more questions? I'd like to remind you that we have two resource sheets up front on the corners of the table, one about the principal blogging project, one about resources of Castle generally. I'll stick around to answer questions. Thanks so much. Those of you who have clickers, you should bring them back up. Sorry they didn't work. Thanks.